It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Next month, the Food and Drug Administration is scheduled to decide whether to approve a new treatment for PTSD, one that involves combining therapy with the use of the drug MDMA.
Often called ecstasy or Molly, MDMA is a Schedule I controlled substance. It's illegal outside of research settings, but the drug company Lykos Therapeutics recently applied for FDA approval of MDMA capsules to be taken as part of therapy for PTSD.
Last month, an FDA advisory committee voted against the application. The committee raised concerns that the potential risks of taking MDMA could outweigh the benefits and questioned some of the data from its trials. That's an advisory committee, though, so that's not the final word.
UW-Madison is one of 13 sites in the U.S., Canada, and Israel working on phase 3 trials with the company. It's the only site in the Midwest.
Two Wisconsin clinical psychologists join us now for a look at the research and the FDA approval process. Both worked on these trials.
Dr. Christopher Nicholas is associate professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health. He's a neuroscientist and has been conducting clinical trials with psychedelics for 9 years. And Dr. Chantel Thomas is executive clinical director at Windrose Recovery and Integrata. She's studied the therapeutic potential of psychedelics for treating PTSD, substance use disorder, and depression. She serves as lead therapist and supervisor on several active psychedelic trials at UW-Madison. Dr. Thomas, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Dr. Nicholas, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Big picture, Dr. Nicholas, why are researchers like you and others looking at MDMA as a potential tool to help treat PTSD?
We're looking at it because there's been more recent history of research indicating that when you combine MDMA with psychotherapy, and administer it with two therapists under controlled conditions, that we see actual clinical benefit in individuals with PTSD. This has been about a multi-decade long research effort to get to the stage that we're at now, where we've completed 2 phase 3 trials investigating this treatment modality. Why it works, we're still trying to figure it out, but there's a lot of different components.
And Dr. Thomas, could you talk about the protocol we're testing out here? This is not a take 2 pills and call me in the morning scenario.
No.
What does it look like, MDMA and that therapy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really interesting because the amount of therapy that people will receive during the course of the trial is anywhere upwards of 40 hours of therapy, all told. And much more intensive than traditional outpatient therapy settings because of 2 reasons, because of the frequency and the intensity of those visits. So folks will go through, in addition to clinical screening and assessment of eligibility, they'll go through 3 preparation sessions, which are 90 minutes long, before every MDMA-assisted therapy dosing session, which in this phase 3 trial would have been potentially therapy-only condition versus therapy plus MDMA. And then after every dosing session, and there's 3 of them, it's followed by 3 integration sessions, which are 90 minutes long each as well, in addition to phone call follow-ups for 2 weeks after every session, every other day.
Dr. Nicholas, you're the local principal investigator for UW's participation in this big trial at the center of the news now, the Lykos Phase 3 trials. Tell us a little bit about what this study is doing, where it is right now.
So we've recently completed 2 phase 3 trials, starting back in late 2016 and ending in 2023. The FDA requires, oftentimes, for a new treatment to be approved, 2 phase 3 trials, and they're multi-site. And why we were selected was that we were the only Midwest site here to participate based on our team's background in working with other psychedelics and our background working with trauma. So we're really excited about where we're at, where we're now under FDA review for a new drug application that would potentially, if approved, legalize and make this a viable treatment for people suffering with PTSD.
And Dr. Thomas, we hear PTSD. I think we all have a vague sense of what that is. Can you talk about who is undergoing these trials, what their lives are like, and what they're hoping to get out of it?
Yeah. So PTSD stands for post-traumatic stress disorder. And so these are individuals, those that were recruited for the trials were folks who were able to identify at least one significant event which left them feeling powerless and helpless, maybe even felt life-threatening at the time. And they have a cluster of symptoms that reflect how they've had to adapt to survive that experience, which has been psychologically incredibly taxing and emotionally demanding, and in many instances had profound and significant implications for how they lived their life, how they engaged in relationships, the relationship they have with themselves, their ability to work. And so these individuals came from all different walks of life, and some of them were fully employed, and some had such severe symptoms they struggled to work gainfully. So there was this whole range. And also different kinds of traumas, right? So it wasn't just one type of trauma that we treated, but a range of traumatic experiences depending on the participant. So this was generalized across different types of traumatic conditions.
Now, people are complicated, of course. This is a complicated therapy. Dr. Nicholas, how do we measure success? How do we see if this therapy is providing a short and hopefully long-term benefit?
It's a really important question. The main outcome measure was the clinician-administered PTSD scale, and that's quite a arduous interview with a blind rater. So the raters are not aware of what treatment arm the participants randomized to, and they go through all the clinical criteria for PTSD, and they administer this measure at different time points throughout the trial, and then later on after the trial has been completed. That's just one measure that measures our primary outcomes around PTSD. There's other measures focused on function, depression, and a whole host of other psychological, you know, outcomes that we are currently evaluating.
Dr. Thomas, apart from the potential for MDMA, do we have a lot in our toolkit when it comes to helping people dealing with PTSD?
Yeah, I think there's been significant strides made in the last several decades in terms of looking at what types of treatments will work for trauma. It's a very difficult condition to treat for many people because part of the maintenance and the survival of navigating trauma is learning how to kind of put it somewhere else inside of you or contain it, compartmentalize it, disconnect from it, right? People have very skillful ways of doing that. And so part of what you're doing with these other trauma treatments is you're trying to get access to something that's really, for good reasons, kind of protected within someone's system. And so there have been great evidence-based treatments looking at treating trauma. Many of the ones that have been studied most heavily are exposure-based. So it's coming back into contact with the thing that's most feared inside a person or based on their history or their memories. And what's challenging about those treatments, despite the fact that they work, is they're very intense and can be so difficult to tolerate that some people will drop out of those treatments because they just don't feel they can manage to stay in the treatment. It's just too difficult and too painful. So I do think the reason that we, you know, folks had been looking at novel approaches is because there are so many people suffering. I mean, we know that for certain if we just look at the veteran population and the number of veterans that are committing suicide or engaged in other destructive behaviors as a way to try and survive. That we need more options, and we need options that really effectively help people get access to the things they've even disconnected themselves from as part of that potential recovery process.
We're talking about MDMA-assisted therapy for PTSD and psychedelics research being done here in Wisconsin at UW-Madison. Two of the researchers are with us now, Dr. Chantel Thomas and Dr. Christopher Nicholas. Dr. Nicholas, the reason we're talking to you now is we've got this advisory commission for the FDA. There's a petition saying, hold on, there's problems with this research. The advisory commission agreed, raising concerns about whether the FDA is going to approve this all in the end. What is your reaction to that advisory panel's recommendation?
Well, there's a lot of complexities to clinical research, and some of the complaints or concerns, I think, are valid, and they need to be investigated, and Lykos Therapeutics, I suspect, is working with the FDA to clarify some of those areas where there's questions. Some of the other concerns, though, I think are kind of old news that came up, like functional unblinding, knowing which treatment that you're receiving during the treatment. When you take a mind-altering substance, it's pretty easy to know what, you know, treatment or what arm you randomize to. So we've known this in the field for a very long time. The FDA has known about this, and they have worked with Lykos to mitigate the impact of unblinding on the data through methodological recommendations. There's a number of other concerns as well, but with any treatment, there are concerns. And sometimes you can address those concerns once you approve the drug and you create parameters around the drug to, or the treatment, I should say, in this case, because it is a package, it's therapy plus MDMA. And you can put parameters around it to ensure that it will be safely administered and hopefully efficacious long-term.
And Dr. Thomas, one other concern people have raised, I think not as a saying, hey, we can never do this, but we need this in place, is the ethics and how we administer the treatment. Someone with PTSD in a vulnerable position in daily life and therapy, now add in MDMA. This could be a very fragile moment. What kind of guidelines, guardrails need to be in place on this kind of therapy?
Yeah. Such a great question, and it kind of dovetails to what I was speaking to before in terms of, like, why do we need to put MDMA in the mix, right? Like, speaking about how there's no question that with this therapy there is an enhanced vulnerability. Anytime we're working through protective layers and potentially quote-unquote defenses that people put in place to survive, you're going to get more exposure and you're going to get more vulnerability. And with that exposure and that vulnerability, parallel to that should be therapists that are working in this modality should be under supervision. They should be doing their own personal work. And actually what happened in the trial, which was kind of lost a bit on that advisory panel, was there was actually very comprehensive adherence criteria that the therapists had to meet while they were delivering this therapy to indicate that they were actually following the protocol. And it wasn't just, you know, this loosey-goosey, do whatever works in the room kind of a thing, but it was actually tracked closely and it was videotaped. So there was a lot of supervision that actually happened within the context of that trial. There was adherence rating that was coming from third parties. In addition to that, there was other consultation meetings. And so, yeah, this is not something to be taken lightly. This is an intensive therapy for anyone who's participated in it. I think they'll speak to that. And there needs to be high levels of ethics and accountability. And MAPS did actually put out a code of ethics around how, what are the principles that should be governing and guiding this process. So this is not a new concern. I think the way it's being characterized in the public right now is making the message pretty muddy in terms of have there been safeguards in place or has there been real thought around ethics and responsibility around this, which has been on my mind the entire time we've been participating in the trial.
Dr. Nicholas, earlier you mentioned a question about why this would work. One notion I've seen is that MDMA gives us a moment in our neuroplasticity, the ability of our brain to be changed, and this opens the door to tackling the damage of PTSD and setting a new path. I'm expressing it poorly, I think, but could you talk about that concept a little?
No, that concept, this critical period that follows or occurs during and then after the use of MDMA and other potential psychedelics, there's been some data around that in rodent models, and they have hypothesized that, you know, that idea that something happens neurobiologically, and, you know, they have some, you know, hypotheses specific to that, that allows one to potentially engage a more psychologically flexible, open-minded place within themselves and a way to look at themselves from new vantage points. But how the whole package works of MDMA-assisted therapy or psychedelic-assisted therapy, I mean, you really have to think about it across different phases of treatment, because we have the therapy component, we have this pharmacological agent, we have the interaction of the therapy and the agent, and then you have the setting in which it occurs. So it's really complex, and I think for the FDA, it's going to be a challenge to really evaluate. You know, they don't have to evaluate why it's efficacious, but like what components pose the most risk and what components offer the most benefit are still a major question in the field.
Dr. Thomas, in the therapy process, just subjectively as someone there, does it feel different to you? Do you get a sense that something special, hopefully beneficial, is happening in these MDMA-related sessions.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking purely from just the experience of being in the room as a therapist and what I observed, I mean, it is pretty... I've been doing trauma reprocessing work and working with trauma for over 20 years in my career. And to see people mobilize the capacity within themselves to stay with things that would be previously intolerable, and not only to stay with it, but to work at that deep level, accessing a very wide range of emotions. And to be able to do that for 3, 4, 5 hours straight, I've never seen anything like that in my life up until this point. And I think the other piece that feels distinctly different about this modality and this model is it's not us as clinicians in the room that are making these connections or insights or kind of, it's not about us and our expertise or our hunches. It's actually about clearing a pathway to support someone connecting to their own insights. They arrive where they need to arrive. They guide their own process internally, and we're there to kind of safely support that and provide help when it is needed, because sometimes it is needed, right? But being able to witness that and being in the room with that emotionally, energetically, like it's been one of the greatest privileges of my career to be able to be part of that and see the bravery and courage of our participants and the work that they did was extraordinary.
Dr. Nicholas, bringing us back to our starting point, the FDA now on this MDMA PTSD treatment research, expecting a decision maybe in August. What is at stake here? What does it mean if the FDA says, no, we're going to approve this, both for this this treatment protocol and for the future of this kind of research?
Well, I don't think we fully know. I think we're learning a lot as we, you know, go through this process for the first time. And I think whatever the decision is, we'll take that information and we'll run with it and apply what we need to apply to future studies and adapt. I don't think this would be the end of the psychedelic research and the resurgence in research in our country and elsewhere. I think it will just allow us to develop more robust study designs if that's what is required. So we'll see. You know, I'm hopeful that they will vote yes, or vote yes with, you know, a number of caveats and parameters around or around the treatment, or, you know, delay it and say, let's kind of evaluate this further. And then we'll come to a, you know, we'll have another vote later on once we learn more.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to both of you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
That was Dr. Chantel Thomas, clinical psychologist at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and Dr. Christopher Nicholas, associate professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health. We talked to him today about research at UW looking at how psychedelics could help people suffering from PTSD and other substance abuse disorders. That's ahead of a decision expected next month from the FDA on whether to approve MDMA-assisted therapy, as we heard an advisory committee suggested not approving it ultimately.